Tip, and welcome to CBS Mornings On The Go. Ahead on this Friday, May 29th, Gail gets candid about a painful time in her life. It's the day she caught her husband cheating. Why she felt now was the time to talk about it. Plus, the fallout from new comments by Jill Biden this CBS Sunday Morning about her husband's health. We'll break it down with an author who wrote the book on the 2024 campaign. And AI is everywhere these days, including dating apps. Can it really help people find love, or is this somewhere the technology should not go? We've also got a big announcement from the people behind Fia, the online shopping app, who also hosts the podcast The Burnouts. And Grammy winner Wyclef Jean, a living legend born in Haiti, is here to talk about his brand new music. All that and more ahead.
We're going to get right to it and begin this hour with a CBS News interview with former First Lady Jill Biden. She talked with CBS Sunday Morning's Rita Braver about the end of former President Joe Biden's reelection campaign and the concerns that many people had about his health before his withdrawal.
Did you ever see signs that he was falling into cognitive decline?
No.
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 Truly?
No.
I mean, people were saying he wasn't the same Joe Biden.
Well, I don't think that's true. He was the same, the essence of the same Joe Biden. But yeah, he was slowing down. He was getting older. I mean, we all observe that. When you know, it's a very intense job. I think it ages you quickly.
Let's talk about all this with Chris Whipple. He's a contributing writer at Vanity Fair magazine. He wrote the book Uncharted, How Trump Beat Biden, Harris, and the Odds in the Wildest Campaign in History. I remember that book very well. Chris Whipple, it's nice to see you again. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Be with you.
I want to get your reaction right away to what you're hearing Jill Biden say about her husband's health at that time.
Yeah, you know, Gail, I really think that we should cut Jill Biden some slack on this. And I'll tell you why. It's a fact that Joe Biden never should have run for re-election. He was too old, or would have been too old at the age of 86 to perform the duties of the presidency. She should have known that. She's complicit in that decision, which was a tragedy for the Bidens and the Democratic Party, arguably the country. But there is no compelling evidence that Joe Biden was unable to perform the duties of the presidency behind closed doors. And I take Jill Biden at her word that she never saw a moment like that disastrous moment in the debate before or after. You know, I was pretty tough on Biden in my book, Uncharted. Ron Klain told me all about how disengaged he was at Camp David in the prep session. But nobody around Biden ever saw an episode like that moment in the debate.
You take her at her word even after the debate when she said you did so well. You answered all the questions, when clearly that did not appear to be the case with all of us who had been watching, and that she had never seen that after. You take her at her word at that?
No, I'm not giving her a pass, Gail, on everything. And obviously that was completely wrong when she said, gee, you did great. You answered every question. I chalked that up to a first lady trying to be supportive in the moment. But no, I don't give her a pass on that. And I don't give her a pass on, as I say, being complicit in what was an historically tragic decision to run for re-election. But there is this article of faith out there that Joe Biden was Woodrow Wilson, incapacitated in a corner while a cabal of aides was running the country by autopen. And it's nonsense. You know, I like Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson. I think they're great reporters, but I think they were wrong on this. I talked to so many aides who were in the room with Biden to the very end, and literally on the morning that he abdicated, when he negotiated a complex multi-nation prisoner swap from his beach house in Rehoboth. So I just think that this is sort of a myth that Biden was incapacitated.
And yet, Chris, a lot of people will say, Jill Biden saying to Rita Braver now that she hasn't seen a moment like that since that debate might strain credibility. And what does it say also about the people around Joe Biden in the Democratic Party who allowed him to continue on his errand, his tilting at a windmill to run for the presidency,
Two separate issues. I mean, on the second issue, there's no question about, as I wrote in my book, Uncharted, that Biden's advisors, a lot of them, were trapped in this fog of delusion and denial. They thought he could run for re-election and thought he could win. He couldn't. He was incapable of running an effective campaign or being president for another 4 years. That's a different issue from whether anything like this had happened before or after the debate. I watched that debate and I thought he was having a stroke. It's perfectly plausible to me that Jill Biden thought so, too, because she hadn't seen a moment like that before or after. And everybody I've talked to, including his closest aides, say long after this debate, they were in endless meetings on policy presided over by Biden, meetings in which Donald Trump would have certainly fallen asleep, but he was functioning. So historians have to deal with the fact that this moment in that debate is still a mystery. We All don't right. know what happened.
All right, Chris Whipple, we thank you so much for your time this morning.
Great to be with you.
Rita Braver's interview with a former First Lady Jill Biden will air this weekend on CBS Sunday Morning. It's time to look for stories that caught our eye. And Kelly has moved from the table over to the other side of the room. Hey, Kelly.
Moving and grooving. All right. We are going to begin with a real life nightmare for a group of 8 students on a recent trip to an amusement park. Right? It's supposed to be fun. Well, they got stuck 100 feet in the air on a roller coaster, and it didn't stop there. They were up in the sky for almost 4 hours. It happened at Pleasure Pier in Galveston, Texas. The good news is first responders were able to get the teens down one by one, and no one was hurt. But my God, I would not get on a roller coaster anytime soon after that. And next up, you could be seeing a $250 bill featuring the face of President Trump. Could you? Maybe. The Bureau of Engraving and Printing says it's moving to produce a commemorative bill for the nation's 250th anniversary. But current federal law says only a deceased individual can appear on U.S. currency. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent talked about the design on Thursday. He said the department will be ready if a proposed bill to change that rule is passed, but otherwise it will follow the law.
And trying to get them to break $250.
A cool
for a Diet Coke. Yo, homie, can you break this?
All right, next up, could a strike be on deck for Major League Baseball? Well, MLB's owners have proposed adding a salary cap. That's the same issue, mind you, that triggered the 1994 strike that canceled the World Series. Now, the plan would limit spending to a little more than $245 million per team starting next season. For reference, the Dodgers have a payroll of more than $415 million this year. That's quite a gap. Now, for decades, the Players Union has said it will never accept a salary cap. And finally, if you've ever been to a baseball game, you've probably dreamed of catching a ball in the stands. Well, that's exactly what happened to one Orioles fan twice in one game.
Right center field off the bat of Mayo. Varsho on the run, can't get there, hits the warning track, into the same guys, a 2-for-2 night.
The fan only kept one as a souvenir. He gave the second ball to a younger fan seated behind him. He should go buy a lottery ticket. I'm calling it right now.
Right. Now they got the video to prove it. That's nice. Yeah. Thank you, Kelly. Now, a follow-up to a story from Thursday. You remember the story about a traffic stop in Florida? Got a whole lot of attention. Why? Because Katie Thomas, that's her name, pulled over. She was given a ticket for driving while using a phone in her right hand. This is important because she showed the deputy she doesn't have a right hand, huh? Christiane Benavidez spoke exclusively to Katie Thomas. And as the latest, Christiane, I can't wait to hear what she has to say. I love this story.
Gail, good morning. Well, look, Thomas told me that she holds no ill will towards the deputy and she hopes this entire ordeal can be a learning moment.
Hello, ma'am.
Body camera video shows the moment Katie Thomas was pulled over by a Palm Beach County Sheriff's deputy in February.
You drove past me holding the phone with your right hand, manipulating that phone. I mean, I saw you with the phone in your hand.
Obviously not.
The deputy alleged that Thomas was driving while using her phone in her right hand, but Thomas doesn't have a right hand.
Initially was, oh, this is going to be funny, which is why I laughed. I cackled more like it. But then it became very apparent when he did not laugh or interact in like a friendly manner.
The video shows the deputy continue to press the 36-year-old.
I thought I saw you with your right hand.
You
had a hand up. The right hand. I saw you manipulate
you
with the right hand, perhaps not.
Watching it after the fact, I realized immediately that I felt very uncomfortable.
You've had this your whole life.
My whole life. I was born this way. It's never going to change. It's never going to hold a phone. It's just going to be how it is.
You did not have your phone in your hand.
I did not.
Hand to God, you don't have one in your hand.
Hand to God.
The other hand to God, you don't have one in your hand.
Hand to God.
Cool. You have your driver's license, registration, yes, insurance with you.
He did not recognize that as a sufficient hand to raise to God, which is ironic considering that's who gave it to me.
This week, the officer requested Palm Beach County dismiss the case, dropping the $114 citation. Thomas hopes the now viral interaction helps people worldwide.
I would love people to take away is that limb difference is normal. Somebody who looks different than you is normal. All of that is normal. Normal is whoever you're most comfortable being.
She is just so inspiring. Now, the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office told me in a statement that their law enforcement officers are required to make decisions based on observations in real time and that they are committed to professionalism and fairness. I asked Katie if she had a direct message for that deputy, and she told me that she welcomed the conversation with him and that the two clearly got off on the wrong foot. Guys.
Key word being observation.
Yeah, yeah.
Once you observe that she did not have that right hand that you said that she was holding the phone in.
But you know what, guys? I love the way she handled it. Mm-hmm. Clearly, she has a good sense of humor about it. But I think in that moment, he really didn't know what to do. Mm. Yeah. I think he didn't know what to do. So he kept playing it straight, even though she was trying to engage and trying to laugh about it. I think in that, listen, I don't know him. It'd be interesting to see from his point of view what he was thinking. But I think he didn't know. But she's right. This could be a learning moment for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
For a lot of people.
Christiane, thank you very much, as always. All right, coming up, one of our favorite competitions of the year, the Scripps Spelling Bee, has its 2026 champ, and it all came down to a spell-off. These kids are incredible. So, hey, Kelly, let's put that Harvard undergrad, Harvard MBA degree to the test. Hey. Like, types.
Kelly, come on and get it. Get it right, whatever it is.
All right, come at me.
Let me give you a word, the winning word here. The word is coawith.
Coawith. What is the
coawithai.
Coawithai.
Coawithai. Well, you got to at least tell it to her right if you're
going to. Coawithai.
What is it?
Coawithai.
Coawithai.
All right, what's the origin, Vlad?
Okay. The origin is Middle Welsh.
Okay, and please use it in a sentence.
At the festival, performers recited traditional coawithai that had been passed down through generations.
Coawithai.
Coawithai.
Okay, actually, I used to want to be a spelling bee champion, and the Welsh thing does help a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with C-Y.
For coawithai?
Yes, because it's Welsh. There's another word I'm thinking about this. C-Y, co-with, W-Y, D-A-U.
Oh, man. Wow.
Is that right?
It's almost right.
Oh. Okay.
But wrong.
What?
It's two Because
with I, fuck. I didn't say it. I didn't say it. I said,
fuck. Folks, this is CBS Mornings.
And she went to Harvard.
All right, so there's always drama at the Scripps National Spelling Bee, but this year it all came down to a tiebreaker. 14-year-old Shrey Parikh of California took the title in a speed round known as a spell-off after 18 rounds of competition. Lilia Luciano shows us how he powered through.
The Scripps National Spelling Bee returned to Washington this year.
Shall we do this?
We shall.
Nine finalists took to the stage yesterday, ready to battle through some of the most difficult words in the dictionary.
Kabbalah, Jalsimia,
Pawake,
Dodecathian, Gumye.
The competition is 100 years old.
Quinca tube.
No.
But it still gave young spellers something they can relate to.
Sentence, please.
The physics teacher demonstrated the difference between destructive and constructive interference to his students by belting Golden from K-pop Demon Hunters into a quinca tube.
That was fun.
One by one, the field shrank until it came down to the final two. 12-year-old Ishan Gupta and 14-year-old Shrey Parikh.
Are you ready?
One sec.
Then came the spell-off, a lightning round tiebreaker. 90 seconds, as many words as possible, no time to second-guess or ask any questions.
N-A-N-N-O-F-O-S-S-I-L.
Tong Kang.
T-O-N-G-K-A-N-G.
Romo Cryptine.
B-R-O-M-O-C-R-I-P-T-I-N-E.
Kashaw.
C-U-S-H-A-W.
Hi.
Gray, you are the Tutan.
Shrey Parikh claimed the title, correctly spelling 32 words to Ishan's 25. This is his third Spelling Bee appearance and second time in the finals.
Spelling fast is what I do every day, so, you know, a spell off just kind of came naturally, and it was just like another day of spelling for me.
Just another day. Yes. I mean, this year was the 101st of the National Spelling Bee and the first time that it was held in Washington after 15 years. Okay, I can confidently say and admit that I knew neither the spelling nor the definition of any of the words in that lightning round, unlike Harvard here.
Yes, yes.
I was so impressed by Kelly.
I do admire the poise of those kids at the spelling
100%.
What was the meaning of the word that you had Kelly do? Did you see her, Lily?
Oh, I was I was so impressed.
Coethai is a traditional form of Welsh poetry.
Of course it is.
Yeah. And the word that I gave you, the first word, was actually the singular form.
There you go.
Coeth.
Okay.
Gil, I'll ask you about Rancho Cucamonga, which is where the winner is.
R-A-N-C-H-O. I know Rancho.
There you go. Oh, brilliant. Thank you very much.
Coming up, could AI help you find love? We're going to ask an artificial intelligence expert how the technology works on romance.
Artificial intelligence affects nearly every aspect of our lives these days, even apparently romance. The dating app Bumble recently announced it's doing away with the swipe feature and introducing an AI matchmaker. So, is AI a helpful tool for finding love, or could it stand in the way of real human connections? Joining us now is a former AI company founder, Matt Schumer. He's also the author of that viral article about artificial intelligence called Something Big Is Happening. Good to see you again, as always. So, Matt, let's start with the basics. How is AI being used in online dating, and what can technology realistically do that I can't do myself when I was a single guy, like trying to chat somebody up? I could do pretty well.
You could do pretty well.
I could.
So currently we have a broken system when it comes to dating apps. Everyone knows it. The apps know it, but they make a ton of money from it. They make money when you stay single and when you stay on the apps from ads, from subscriptions. So they actually don't want you to find love, because if you do, they're done making money. The idea with this new AI stuff is it could flip that business model on its head in a big way. Instead of people paying to stay on the apps, what if it was actually free to be on the apps? But once you found someone, say you were together for a year, say you got married, then you pay, and you pay more. Almost like if everyone got their own matchmaker. Right now, that's reserved for the upper tiers of society, but what if everyone had that same service?
So you pay only when there's a match.
Exactly.
Because you're saying right now, if you swipe, 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 to the left, to the left, to the left, they're making money.
Exactly.
The whole time that
The whole time you don't find love.
The whole time you don't find love. So how would they pair you up with, how would this matchmaker system work? Because I'm not quite following how it would work.
So
you have to answer all the questions?
Yes. So right now, it's very superficial. You're looking at pictures and a few details about a person. But that doesn't tell you what makes a relationship successful. And that's part of the problem. And they know that, but that's part of why they do things the way they do, because it keeps you
there.
On the apps, that's the whole business. Instead, what if, say, you talk to an AI, just like you would talk to a human matchmaker, for hours, telling it every detail about your life, what you're looking for in someone. Maybe it can even intuit some of the things you don't realize you need. And then it finds you, goes out and finds you, the perfect person. It can give you a set of, say, 10 profiles a month, much smaller than the thousands of profiles you could swipe through that are curated for you, because it wants you to find love.
Well, Bumble must agree with you, because if they're taking out the swiping feature, true?
Yes, because they know something that everyone else is about to find out. The current dating app industry is like Blockbuster in 2008, when Netflix
was being
cooked up. Right now, their business model locks them in to the way they're doing things. But there are going to be new startups, and they're already popping up, that are doing things in this new way. And it's going to catch on. And if they want to stay relevant and if they want to stay alive, they're going to have to do this to compete.
I guess the concern I have with this is, one, what if I lie when I'm saying all these things in order to try and get to a certain person? And also, I see how it would work with the logic, but I don't know how it's going to, like, figure out if I see someone and I'm like, oh, hey, right? Because, like, there are some things where I connect with someone logically, but it's never going to work physically.
Or they look good on paper.
Yeah. How is AI going to solve for those two things?
First, in terms of the honesty portion, this is already a problem. And my view is this. AI companies have put so much money into this stuff. These dating app companies are going to put so much money into this stuff. Mm-hmm. They have tons of this AI processing power. If they can use it to help you find matches, they should also be using just a bit of it to help prevent that. They can look through the conversations with the AI itself and say, is there anything that doesn't line up here? Because if you're talking to an AI for hours, you're likely going to slip up at some point. Right?
That's fair.
Yeah.
Do you see any risk or downside to AI getting into the dating business?
On this portion, no. I think it could actually be an unequivocally good thing for society. One thing that does concern me is there are people forming emotional connections with these bots.
That aren't real.
Right, that aren't real. Yeah. That's a real problem. I still believe being out there, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat, real time, it's the best way to live.
I still like the friend of a friend of a friend, know somebody who knows somebody.
Traditional human connection. But that's what I'm talking
about. That ain't working so far. So I'm just curious.
We'll help
just
you out. Curious. Matt Schumer, always good to have you, my friend. Thank you very much.
It's time to bring you some of the stories that we call Talk of the Table, because we're doing it a little bit earlier than usual because we want to save time for later on. So, Kelly, you're in pole position. What you thinking?
Okay, so I want to talk about music executive, entrepreneur, and former talent manager Scooter Braun. Right, he was always cast as the villain. Well, he gave a rare interview to the Free Press podcast, Second Thought. Now, Braun told the host, Susie Weiss, about his business relationship with Taylor Swift. Remember, he had a really public feud with Swift over the ownership of her music masters. Here's part of what Braun had to say.
I don't know Taylor Swift. I think I've met her in my life three times. I have never had a substantial conversation with her in my life. I one time got invited to a private party by her. She told me she had the utmost respect for me. I told her I had the utmost respect for her. You don't spend $300 million buying a label that she's on unless you're excited at the opportunity to work with her. I will never truly understand that situation to this day. I wish her nothing but the best. I learned a tremendous amount from it. I chose to grow from it. I'm grateful for it at this point in my life. But I think there's this big misconception that like we knew each other and we had this feud and like, you know, I managed her for years. And people are usually shocked to find out that I legitimately don't know her and didn't have many interactions with her and never really knew her. Like I said, I think I met her three times in my life, and I think I spoke to her really once for like more than 2 minutes. But it was a very nice conversation, and beyond that, nothing ever. And then the 3 years prior to us buying Big Machine, she and I had no contact. I think it was 2 years. The party was like 2 years earlier, 3 years earlier. And never had any contact through the whole thing. So I'm just as confused that this is part of my life as you are, but I choose to learn and grow from it. I don't know Taylor.
Now, you can see more of Susie's interview with Scooter on the Free Press website, wherever you find your podcasts. Of course, the Free Press is owned by our parent company. I listened to the whole thing. He had some really interesting things to say about AI and music. Of course, we were just talking about AI. I don't know if I believe you only talked to Taylor Swift three times.
It was their representatives, and even if it's your representatives, yeah, it still means you.
Right, 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 exactly. I'd be curious to hear what Taylor thinks about that.
Yeah, I was going to say Team Taylor, I'm sure, has a very different view of that, because the parting seemed to be quite nasty. I know Scooter think he's very talented, nuts about Taylor, but they have two very different versions about what happened. Mm-hmm. So I'm very curious to hear that interview.
Yeah, that's a good one.
My Talk of the Table is a shout out to all of this year's graduates, class of 2026. Let's start with 6-year-old Graham. His mom says he went through several stages of boredom while sitting through his kindergarten graduation ceremony in Longview, Texas. I just love his reaction, because this is how most of us feel at graduation. You certainly feel this if you go to a friend's graduation. It's not even your own child, but you go, Graham.
I like his
congratulations.
Little,
I love
his
this.
Cross legs.
So from Graham, I know. So from Graham to a group of students who are definitely, they're not going to be bored during their graduation. Listen to them.
I'm really excited to share some cool news about commencement. And specifically who's going to be there. It's Missy Copeland!
Isn't that a nice way to feel about your graduation speaker? Why? Because that's a senior class in New York City's Success Academy, where the trailblazing ballerina and badass Missy Copeland is going to be their graduation speaker. Her message, she says, will be to focus on resilience, excellence, and the importance of creating access and widening the space for others. But I love that kind of reaction, because do you even remember who your graduation speaker was?
From high school?
From high school.
I do not.
I don't. Do you, Kelly?
No.
I don't think we had one. I think we had,
but we had one.
Did you? Yeah. We had our valedictorian, Camille Bacci was his name. Camille Bacci.
So you do remember, of course.
But yeah, he wasn't anybody. He was a classmate.
But to have Misty Copeland, who's going to be your graduation speaker, I think that is very, very cool.
Mm-hmm. Very cool indeed. All right, coming up, we're going to be joined by the co-hosts of the popular podcast, The Burnouts.
Oh, there
Phoebe
they
Gates
are.
And Sophia Kiani are here. We're so excited. They've got an exclusive announcement about their time and money saving app. It's called Fia. Find out what it is when we come back.
Like in my 20s, I learned so much when I was young. And those experiences led me to a lot of other learnings when I was older.
Welcome back to CBS Mornings. That, of course, is Kris Jenner talking to Phoebe Gates and Sophia Kiani on their podcast, The Burnouts. The duo interviews entrepreneurs and shares their experience as co-founders of the startup app Fia. Now, the AI-powered shopping assistant compares pricing on clothes, shoes, and accessories and has more than a million users. Exclusively on CBS Mornings, Fia is announcing dozens of celebrity investors. You can see some of them there. Mindy Kaling, Khloe Kardashian, Jessica Alba, Shaboozy. Ashley Graham, the list goes on, and tech titans from platforms like OpenAI and Venmo. Phoebe Gates, Sophia Kiani, join us now. Good morning, ladies.
Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. I mean, this is such an exciting announcement. I used to work in the startup world. When you get that funding, that confidence of investors, it is so incredible. So I'm going to start with you, Phoebe. I mean, how does this moment feel to have such a list of folks that we just put up there saying, yeah, Fia, let's go?
I mean, it feels absolutely incredible. Me and Sophia met at Stanford, and to have these people around the table building the future of shopping with us is honestly truly a dream. So we couldn't be more excited to have these people in our corner as we create for our obsessive shoppers.
How did you decide? Number one, I'm wearing a Khloe Kardashian dress from her Good American line.
We love Good American. We partner with
them. She has very good taste.
Very thoughtful.
But I'm curious about Fia. The name comes from the combination of your two names, which I like very much. So you're at Stanford together. Are you roommates? Are you sitting around? Where did you come up with this idea, Sophia?
So Phoebe and I were roommates at Stanford randomly, actually, and we took a generative AI and entrepreneurship class together. And so in the class, we basically looked at e-commerce and realized there was this opportunity to totally transform the consumer experience. Obviously, we both fought over each other's clothes. We loved shopping. And it was a really natural combination of our interests. And we saw this huge platform shift and opportunity to create a better experience for our users.
And what was your pitch to investors? Because when I saw Shaboozy, what was your pitch?
What do you say to Shaboozy?
Yeah, and who were you looking for? What types of people were you looking for? What were you asking them? And what was the pitch?
Absolutely. Well, Fia is essentially like a companion that sits in your browser, answers the question that every single consumer asks. Should I actually buy this? We're telling you, is it the right price? Is it going to hold value? Does it have good material quality? And then using all of that to give our users like a personalized shopping feed back inside the app for them. That's essentially like their personal shopper in their pocket. So when we thought about who we wanted to raise from, it was who are the tech entrepreneurs of today that we can really learn from to build this product? But also, who are the cultural icons in fashion where everyone wants to dress like them, where they are really influencing taste and culture? And so for us, it was about bringing those people and getting them around the table to build what we're doing with the future of shopping.
You guys still raising money?
No, we're heading down the
today. Gail's like, I want in.
Asking next, for a friend.
Asking for a friend.
For you, Gail, we might be.
Asking for a friend.
Speaking of influences, you both host one of my favorite podcasts, The Burnouts, and you get people who are founders of startups. You interview famous entrepreneurs. What's the best advice, Sophia, that they've given you?
Definitely that you need to stay close to your customer. Even today, every 2 weeks, it's a tradition that we do where we sit down with a group of women and we have them basically roast our app and give us very candid feedback. And it's been one of the primary mechanisms by which we've been able to very rapidly iterate.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
How do you figure out who you're bringing in to talk with?
We used to do it based on social media. We would actually just post on the Fia Instagram and ask women in New York, hey, if you're someone who has the Fia app downloaded, you want to come give us feedback, we'll give you free food. Wow. And come to our office on a Friday night. And so many women volunteered their time and came and gave us very candid feedback, a little too candid. but it has really been so good for us. I mean, if you look at Fia today, it's been roughly a year. We're at over 1.5 million users. And so much of the rapid iteration that we saw was from women sitting down and telling us this doesn't make sense. And so we continue to do that today. And now we actually will email and reach out to users that we see are power shopping and using the Thea platform, because we want to make sure that the experience gets better for them.
But you guys talk about being candid. I mean, people giving you candid. You were both candid on your podcast. Yep. Number one, one of my favorites was top lessons in building an empire. And Phoebe says this about your dad, Bill Gates. He's not a charismatic person, but he is an expert type leader. I bet Dad said, ouch. I was curious about what he said.
Oh, he said, now you're right.
No, because I'm nuts about your mom. Melinda, of course, is a badass, also a very successful person in her own right. I'm curious about the type of leader you think you are coming from the family that you come from, because you have two powerhouses that you can learn many, many lessons from.
You know,
and you could have asked them for the money for this, too, but you did not.
It was really, really important for us to raise capital on our own and to bring investors. We were super excited about, you know, Kleiner, Close, and Notable around the table for us. Yeah. And for me as a leader, I think, you know, it really comes back to team, team, team. And I've learned that from both of my parents, that really the company that you're building is all about the team. And so, you know, our engineering team, we're a team of only 25 people supporting over 1.5 million users. I can't thank them enough. I mean, we are working 7 days a week relentlessly. And so focusing on continuing to acquire incredible talent and expand our team is really where I focus.
Yeah, I like one of the lessons they said on the podcast was it's good to work with people that you actually like.
Yeah.
I do think that's important, though, in the people that you bring in, that you at least have to like the people that you're working with, Sophia.
Well, I mean, when you think about a startup, it's you get there early in the morning, you're there late at night, you're spending so much of your time with these people. You need to really admire, respect, and definitely like them. Yeah. And so our culture is really important to us. I mean, our whole team went to Florida a couple of weeks ago. I'm very close with everyone now.
Well, congratulations,
Cheering
Thea.
You
it's
on.
Killing it. Cheering you on always, Phoebe and Sophia. We thank you. Oh, two time. Oh, I love that song. It's from the Fugees. Our next guest is a founding
two
member
times.
Of the group. Yeah, I love that song. He's a founding member of the group and overall music icon. We could use the word icon because his name is Wyclef Jean. He's in the building. The Grammy winner's career spans more than 3 decades. You heard me right. 3 decades. And today, Mr. Jean is out with his latest song. It's called Mr. October from his new album, Clef Notes. I love that title, too. Take a listen.
Look. You speak English, right? That's common sense. Me, I had to learn how to speak English for self-defense. Going through them projects, your boy learned the battle rap. The more my punch connected, the less I had to scrap, and that's real rap.
I love that line, common sense, self-defense. Clef Notes is the first part of a multi-album project. It's called Quantum Leap, and we're happy to say why Clef Jean is here to tell us his thinking on all of this, because let me get this straight. I thought I was reading numbers wrong, Wyclef, because it said you plan to release 7 albums in 1 year.
Yeah, 7 albums.
And why 7, not 3, not 5, not 10? Why 7? What's your thinking here?
7's the number of completion, and I started the project 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I got drifted out of music when I decided that I was going to go into politics. And run.
Not going to politics, run for president.
Run for president of Haiti.
Ran for president. And so this is coming back, and it's completion, where I feel like these 7 projects were very important, and I never got a chance to finish them.
Yeah, you've said you still don't feel that the world has figured you out. And you're hoping after they hear this music, they will understand. What is it you want them to understand?
Well, the first thing I want them to understand is I came from a prodigy background. Before I was 17, I was already a jazz major. Quincy Jones came to one of my first plays, off-Broadway plays, when I was like scoring like music for off-Broadway. And so the gist of what I do is built off a composer like Quincy, Thelonious Monk, and all of that. People usually say collaborations, right?
Yeah.
But I'm like the brain tank, like the scientist behind a lot of it. So with these 30 years of music, I get to show you, versus me saying like Little Richard, Joe, I invented rock and roll.
Yes.
I get to just literally put it inside of a project. Mm.
So Gail referenced the line in your new single, Mr. October, you speak English, that's common sense. Me, I had to learn English for self-defense. Yeah. So many of us who are in the diaspora or who were born in Haiti but came here as young children can relate to a line like that.
Yeah.
You know, old school Haitians, you only speak French or Creole in the house. And when you get out into the world and you've got an unusual name, I've got an unusual name. You got an unusual name. It's hard out there.
No, it's hard in general for immigrants, period. When you come to the States, you have to adapt. You within the projects. What I love about this record is it's featuring G Herbo from Chicago. And we know the situation of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And this is a real conversation between nephew and uncle. Mm. Like the real conversation of, you know, gang culture, right? We talk about how do we make it better? And at the end of the record, we both come to a term of reform, right? And that's really the message behind that whole Mr. October. It's like, yeah, you could start one way, but at the end of the day, yeah, you can go from selling crack. You can go from, you know, the pain of your parents divorcing, and you can make it better. So that's the idea of the record, yeah.
And that's something that I noticed when listening to your music, that it really is dealing with these themes of transformation and making something of yourself. And of course, we, you know, we talked about it. You worked with Lauryn Hill. You're part of the Fugees.
Yeah.
The motto was, we're not just music.
Yeah.
We are a movement. What do you think you have accomplished with that movement in the 30 years since the album The Score?
You know, it's not a part of the world that I go to. I'm talking about I could go to the igloo with the Eskimos and they're going to be like, one time, two times. You know what I mean? And then that's really it. Like that's when funny. We started, the idea was like, we're going to be a movement. Because once we're a movement, it's bigger than the music. And what's the movement? We're going to be a voice for those that don't have a voice. So once you do that, it becomes bigger than the music. And like Bob Marley music, it just, it's
forever. People compare you to Bob Marley. Are you done with politics?
Well, I'm done with running for president of Haiti.
Okay.
But what I want to focus on is better policies for the country. As a private sector man, I need great government so I could bring investment back to my country, right? I have like 30,000 farmers. You know, I would like to start big business in my country. I want to be part of Trade for Trade, but we have to enforce the anti-corruption law.
What is, you've always rep for Haiti ever since I've known you. That's been, you've front and center, you've put the country front and center. What do you think is the biggest misconception that people here in the United States have about Haiti?
Good question.
Well, I think the biggest misconception is like Haiti is within the Americas. I think it's our contribution to America. Like, Haiti has contributed to America. I think when we look at the course of history, even we can't mention the Louisiana Purchase without mentioning the Haitians. So I want America to know, like, we're part of you. So it's important to know that.
All right, Wyclef Jean, it's important. It is an honor to know you. I'm so glad you're here. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You are still killing it.
We vibe.
7 albums in 1 year. You heard me right. His song, Mr. October, is available starting today. The album, Clef Notes, comes out June 26th.